You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. To the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Service Employees Local 1, and Pipe Fitters, Local 533. Service Employees International Union, Local 1, gives workers and working families a voice in fighting for respect and dignity on the job. Our members are janitors in Kansas City and surrounding suburbs and local sports and entertainment staff. The Pipe Fitter powers the engines of industry that keep business thriving in America. They install, maintain, and service any system that involves air conditioning, heating, chemicals, or refrigeration in residential, commercial, or industrial buildings, as well as high-tech clean rooms. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, we'll look at Missouri lawmakers' relentless attempts to assassinate our labor rights and our battle to save them. Representative Judy Morgan will detail the assaults in the legislative session. Then, we'll discuss the campaign to revive them by repealing last year's right-to-work law. In the news, is Planned Parenthood in Colorado union busting? And what is skinny NAFTA? Now for the news.
AFL-CIO, the Teamsters, and the Steelworkers have all issued statements against the latest apparently desperate ploy by corporate free trade lobbyists to rescue the failing NAFTA negotiations. It's called Skinny NAFTA. Teamsters General President Jim Hoffa explained, "We've waited nearly a quarter century to get out of the flawed and failed NAFTA deal. The premise of these talks all along has been that if something is worth doing, it's worth doing all the way." Ambassador Lighthizer and the NAFTA team at the USTR have worked hard to rebalance the old trade pact in several ways that we could support in a ratification vote in Congress, as long as the New Deal represents real reform around key Teamster priority issues like labor, cross-border trucking, and the elimination of the old investor-to-state mechanism in the investment chapter. We feel strongly that they should not give up now. The United Steelworkers International President Leo W. Gerard said, "In Washington, business leaders are talking about approving portions of the NAFTA renegotiations while leaving the most important provisions for possible later action. They want changes that benefit business while denying workers any relief from outsourcing and reducing our unacceptably high NAFTA trade deficit. For far too long, multinational companies have profited at the expense of workers in all three countries. The special interest lobbyists have called this a skinny deal containing limited provisions. There can be no mistake that they are trying to grab more benefits while continuing to oppose actions that would help workers. These include advancing labor rights, improving rules of origin, eliminating the investor-state dispute settlement, and adopting a sunset review. It is classic Washington bait and switch that is unacceptable." In a tweet, the AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said, "Fat cat CEOs who have been profiting from NAFTA for 24 years are trying to short-circuit negotiations to ensure they continue to enrich themselves at the expense of North America's workers. Don't fall for skinny NAFTA."
Vice News asks whether political campaigns should be unionized. They report that thousands of campaigns around the country are running this year on a promise to improve the lives of the American worker. And just a handful of them are using the campaign to improve the lives of their own workers. The Campaign Workers Guild is a new effort to unionize the people who make campaigns run on the ground. It contracts to provide workplace perks like paid sick days, reimbursements, and harassment reporting procedures, office basics that are nonetheless virtually unheard of in normal campaign jobs.
Meanwhile, one of the great champions of women and feminism, Planned Parenthood, is not just facing existential threats from the Trump administration, but one of its branches. Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains is facing charges from the left. Planned Parenthood Rocky Mountain is accused of union busting. The Intercept reports that staff for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains, in accordance with SEIU Local 105, won the election for their union in December 2017. But shortly after the vote to unionize, Planned Parenthood leadership, instead of recognizing the new unit, turned to the Republican-controlled National Labor Relations Board to challenge the outcome. Planned Parenthood won the first round, and the appeal will now move to the full five-member labor board. In April, Trump labor board appointees Marvin Kaplan and Bill Emanuel sided with Planned Parenthood's argument that the union ought to include all the clinics in the regional agency, which spans three states. Meanwhile, former President Obama's appointee, Lauren McFerrin, voted against the appeal and in favor of the workers. She said, "In many, if not most, instances, such daunting geographic barriers could be prohibitive to employees' right to choose and engage in collective bargaining." We asked Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains if they had a response to the Intercept article. Whitney Phillips, Vice President of Communications and Brand Experience, said, "Over the past year, SEIU Local 105 worked to organize only 14 of our 24 health centers, 14 out of 18 in Colorado, 0 out of 4 in New Mexico, and 0 out of 2 in Southern Nevada. During this time, we have communicated repeatedly our belief that all our colleagues deserve to have their voices heard, urging SEIU to include all health center staff in any proposed bargaining unit. With less than 14% of all our health center employees voting to form a union, we asked the National Labor Relations Board to reconsider the exclusion of 10 of our health centers. We value the long history of our partnership with unions and believe in the most important contributions labor makes in our communities. And we value deeply the choice of every single employee who could be impacted by the important decision to form a union." Planned Parenthood does not have to follow the NLRB decision. It could voluntarily recognize a unit defined by its union supporting workers and the SEIU.
On Wednesday night, about 70 people stood in the back of the Kansas City Board of Education meeting room in silence, holding signs which had a simple message: respect. Ramona Mack, a school custodian who has worked for the Kansas City Public Schools for 20 years and who serves as a union steward, said, "Last night, SEIU Local 1 KCPS custodians, food service workers, and maintenance workers attended the KCPS board meeting in silence to demand the respect and resources we need to keep schools clean and safe for teachers and students. For months, we've had little respect from the operations side of KCPS." The workers and a number of allies from Jobs with Justice, the Iron Workers Union, and AFT, which represents KCMO teachers, all stood in silence for about 10 minutes after the meeting began, keeping the school board in suspense as to what they were up to. Then they all marched out in silence. If the board didn't know what it was about, they soon did, because administrators knew. The custodians and food service workers were upset over unfulfilled promises made by the district and a serious lack of respect for agreements made. Specifically, they wanted fulfillment of promises made on summer staffing and pay in skilled trade positions. They made their point. Ramona Mack told Heartland Labor Forum, "After last night, we showed that we deserve respect and had some of our demands met. While we still support the superintendent's vision and direction for KCPS, we still urge the district to hear our concerns on outstanding issues. The demands that were met came in the form of a phone call to the union this morning, opening up 32 additional jobs for the summer." The news tonight was read by Kim Claus, Judy Ansel, Jen Zaman, and I'm Jason Roberts.
3 weeks out of prison, he drives the cold Missouri night. There's strip malls and abandoned mines out on the left and the right. He drives into Mount Olive in the Becker Funeral Home. Where's Daddy's lying with a cold hard stare, black lung, broken bone? The most dangerous woman in America is buried on the edge of town. Oh, look out, Ma, another miner's going down.
Hi, this is Kim Claus. A couple of weeks ago, we had Representative Judy Morgan on the show to talk about some of the anti-labor bills that were working their way through the Missouri legislature. This week, Judy has graciously agreed to come back on and let us know what happened with those bills and how the end of the legislative session went. Representative Judy Morgan, welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum.
Thank you, Kim. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be back in Kansas City for a while, away from Jeff City.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although we'll be going back soon for special session. So,
well, there you go. You never get to stay away from there long lately. So let's go ahead and just kind of run down these anti-labor bills that we kind of talked about before. We'll start with right to work, which has been so confusing, you know, even to those of us that have been following it. So can you give us what's going on?
Yeah, you know, I think probably everybody knows about a year and a half ago, the General Assembly passed a right-to-work bill. It was SB, Senate Bill 19, signed into law by the governor very quickly, but organized labor decided to fight back, and I have to tell you, they did an amazing job. They decided to get a referendum to basically repeal that law, to take it to the people. They got 310,000 signatures, which was triple the amount they needed to put it on the ballot, and they got signatures in every single congressional district, all eight, which is a feat that's very seldom been realized in Missouri. So they did an amazing job. And on that referendum, it said that it would be in November. The vote would be in November. Right. Of course, we want it in November because more folks vote in November that we're probably going to be more likely to be on our side. So, but there is a little provision that says the General Assembly can change the date of the election. So that's what happened last week. A bill had been filed a while back. It kind of set for a while, didn't do much. But it took, you know, really picked up steam those last few days of session. And so the referendum has been moved to August. So it will now be in August rather than November. I just read the governor just signed it probably sometime this afternoon, I would guess. So we will be having that election in August. And I'm sure hoping it's Proposition A is what it's called. And what it will do is it will repeal the bill that the General Assembly passed to make our state a right-to-work state. And it will repeal it. And so if the people decide that's what they want, which I hope that is what they decide they want, then we will not be a right-to-work state.
And so wasn't there a second right-to-work thing kind of going through there this year?
Yes. And there was another one that was really bad. It would have been a constitutional amendment. So it would have actually put right to work enshrined in the Constitution. And it was put forth by Rick Bratton. We heard it the week before the end of session. And it had language. So conceivably what could have happened, you could have had the referendum that organized labor supported on the August ballot, then you could have this other one on the November ballot, which would enshrine right to work in the Constitution as a constitutional amendment. And so say we voted, no, we don't want right to work in August, then we could turn around in November, they'd have like a second chance to try to then put it in the Constitution. Thank goodness that one did not pass. The one that moved it to August did pass, but the one that would have done this constitutional amendment in November did not make it through. It made it through the House, but it got stopped in the Senate. So that's not going to be on the ballot. So that is good news.
That is good. Did they bring it to a vote in the Senate, or did they just not? I don't.
I don't think they even brought it to a vote in the Senate. I don't know if they brought it up. Sometimes they bring it up on the floor, then they lay it on what's called the informal calendar, and it can be brought up from the informal calendar, but a lot of times it goes to the informal calendar, it's dead. So I'm not sure if they even got that far. But we just passed it that very I believe it was that Friday before the last week of session was when the House passed. Well, it was obviously very, very contentious mm-hmm. among us because many of us did not support that. We thought that was a really dirty trick. You know, the organized labor and all the people who helped them went through the process like you're supposed to go through, get those signatures, get it on the ballot, and then you turn around. First, the General Assembly decides to move it to August when you, and normally it's always in November unless the General Assembly moves it, and then secondly, this other dirty trick. And I guess that the pro-right-to-work folks had been out actually trying to get another petition signed, initiative yeah. petition signed to get it on the ballot. I think they spent around $750,000, and a lot of it was the dark money from A New Missouri, which is Governor Greitens' dark money PAC. And they weren't able to get the signatures.
Wow.
So they weren't able to get the signatures in time to have it certified to be on the ballot. So then that's when this one bill had been sitting for a while to do this thing in November to put it in the Constitution. Well, then all of a sudden it got legs and just went like crazy.
Yeah.
But thank goodness it didn't pass the Senate.
Yeah.
So that is a piece of good news.
Yeah, right. So it didn't muddy the waters.
Right. Oh, that would have really muddied the waters,
yeah.
you know.
But we're just, on this, but yes
yeah.
on this, what do we do?
Right.
How do we vote?
Right.
Of course, that's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, is to confuse
exactly.
people.
Exactly. So thank goodness, you know, we're just going to have to get out and work really hard, those of us who are anti-right to work and so-called right to work, and make sure that people vote no on Proposition A.
All right. So,
Can I just say one more thing?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I mean, you might say, why did the Republican leadership want to do this? And I think they wanted to do it because they realized that labor voters, who are more probably are more Democrats, they aren't all, but they probably are more Democrats, are more likely to get out in November.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they were afraid they might lose some of their legislative races too if we had
right.
more of these labor folks out voting anti-right to work. And then, of course, that also would affect the Democratic U.S. Senate race.
Absolutely.
So I think that's why they moved it. But so we're just going to have to prove them wrong and get out in August and vote and get out in November and vote again.
I think it's really interesting that if they really thought that everybody in the state wanted to be a right-to-work state, they wouldn't work so hard to muddy the waters.
Oh, exactly.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
that really is very telling that
right.
they know that they're in the minority.
And, you know, you ask businesses, you know, what kinds of things do you want when you decide to bring a business to Missouri? Right-to-work isn't one of them. You know, they want infrastructure. They want good transportation. They want good schools. They want an educated workforce. You know, these are the kinds of things they want. They're not necessarily interested in right to work. And whenever we've had a hearing on it down in Jeff City, hardly anybody comes and testifies in favor of it. Very few people. And yet you've got a lot of people that show up to testify against it.
Well, and we all know that has a lot more to do with donors.
Right, exactly.
Right, the
exactly.
big money donors. That's
exactly.
what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the next thing, I wanted to move on to prevailing wage. That's
yes.
been another thing that for years they've been going at us.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ended up happening with prevailing
yeah,
wage?
Yeah, and prevailing wage is, I think, kind of a complicated one, at least for somebody like me who comes from a public employee union. I'm not
mm-hmm.
as, you know, I'm not as experienced with the building trades, but it affects the building trades. Occupations, and it only applies to public works. So if somebody, a school contracts out, a school district to build a new school, or if the state contracts out to do improvements on the road, so it's only public works. And what happens is the contractors have to turn in the hours worked by job classification, you know, plumbers, electricians, and then carpenters. And then there's an average wage that is set up for each county. It goes county by county. And so the intent is to have it be a level playing field, and also to make sure you're getting quality work by paying people enough and not having some out-of-state company come in and undercut everybody to take those jobs. So So what happened is a lot of, you know, some folks said, well, we don't want to have to turn these hours in. It's burdensome. And some of the rural districts said it costs too much. And it isn't just union members that get the prevailing wage. It's non-union.
Right.
It's all workers.
Right.
It applies to all workers. Whoever gets that contract to build that school or work on those roads, whether they're union or non-union, they get the prevailing wage. So what they've done is they came up with a compromise. It's not the worst bill in the world. And what it is if the contractor still turns in the 1,000 hours, it's still going to be prevailing wage in that particular county. But if they don't turn in the 1,000 hours, then it's going to be called, let's say, public works contracting minimum wage, and it will only be 120% of the county average wage. It's a big, big discrepancy in terms of between prevailing wage and 120% of the, you know, the average wage. Like, right. Like for instance, it might be $30 prevailing wage and 18 if you take this other wage. So probably what's going to happen is the bigger cities, the bigger localities, you know, that have more of a union presence, that will be on the contractors to turn those hours in. You know, there's bigger projects. They're probably going to be able to keep the prevailing wage. It's probably going to hurt the rural areas where there's maybe not as many projects, maybe not as much of a union influence to take care of that. So I think that's where it's going to, where it will be hurt. And then also any project that is less than $75,000, the prevailing wage will not be applicable on any of those projects. Now that's probably, again, probably in your big cities. There's not a lot of, most projects are probably over that, but they're again, right. In the rural areas, it's probably going to, and a lot of those rural folks voted for this, and they're going to be hurting the very people that they represent.
Happens.
Right.
Nonstop.
Right. So I hope I've explained that well, because it isn't. It's a concept that I've never had to actually mm-hmm. experience because I haven't been in that field. But I think labor, you know, the Senate made a compromise, and I think that they are at least happy that, you know, they got a compromise. It's a watered down version of prevailing wage, right. But it's not like repealing it. That's what they were really fighting, was to keep it from being repealed completely and throw everybody into this. You're only going to get this 120% of the average county wage.
Yeah. Well, okay, so not the worst.
Not the worst. It's, I mean, a lot of us still voted against it because,
well,
you know,
of course.
But it was, but at least it was, you know, you can at least say, well, at least there was some compromises made between all the different factions to come up with something that was livable, you know,
right.
For most people. I'm just sorry that I think the rural workers are probably going to be hurt worse than the city workers in this process.
They are. So let's talk about the worst bill in the world.
Yes, House Bill 1413.
A number that is burned into many brains. So this is the one, and we talked about this, you know, fairly extensively the last time you were on. It's the, you know, used to be paycheck deception. Oh, those were the days. Paycheck deception / anti-bargaining / recertification
right.
bill. And this one kind of seemed in a whole bunch of forms to kind of course, this, I work for AFT, so I'm a public sector mm-hmm. union person. And so I turn into a little bit of a legislative nerd during this
yeah,
session and listen
yeah.
in a lot. And it bounced around in different forms.
Oh, yeah.
And they tried to make all kinds of compromises. So kind of give us what kind of happened in the last week or so.
Yeah, the original bill was the one that would make the unions re-sign everybody up every year for their dues and their political action contributions. And as you know, public employee unions are voluntary. Yeah, it's we are right to work. You know, we cannot force anybody to be a member of the union. It, you know, you're not a member of a union as a condition of employment. You join
right.
the union voluntarily. So people can get out of the union. Some the rules are different, but, you know, like in the teachers union, you can get out any time.
Right.
Now, some unions have a window each year when you can get out. There's, a variety of ways of doing it. But ultimately, it's voluntary. So it's just insane to me that you're saying you have to sign everybody up every year when they can voluntarily leave anyway.
That's right.
So I've always thought that the whole paycheck deception is just a way really to weaken the voices of those of us in the union, because you're going to be spending your time signing everybody up rather than doing the things we should be doing, like, you know, for us, educational stuff, working on grievances, working on contract language, and, you know, helping our members. Instead,
right.
we're going to be out signing them up all the time rather than doing what we really want to do. So I really think it's a way to weaken the voices of those of us in public employee unions. But by the way, some public employee unions were exempted
mm-hmm.
from the bill, so that probably needs to be said. They were the first responders, people like firefighters, police officers, nurses, EMTs, those kinds of folks are exempted, and all the employees who work for the Department of Corrections. So right. Everybody who works in the prisons and probation and parole, and they're all exempted. The sponsor very proudly said, because I did an inquiry of him on the floor, and he very proudly said that, oh, yes, but most of the public employees are still covered under this, you know, even though we exempted the first responders. He didn't want to exempt the first responders. That happened over on the Senate side. So, but still, it does. It impacts a great number of public employees in the state of Missouri. So that was one. Probably that's one now we could have lived with, you know, compared to what we ended up with. Okay, so now we have to have a recertification election every 3 years. Now, everybody else also knows you can decertify any union. There's a mechanism you have to go through. But if people are really unhappy with a particular union, you can go through the process of decertifying it. You have to recertify every 3 years. And the vote has to be a majority of not just the people who voted, but the whole number of people in the collective bargaining unit. So if you've got 1,000 members, that means you've got, or 1,000, they're employees. Not necessarily members, right. Employees, that's right. 1,000 employees, 501 would have to vote to keep the union. Now, if 700 voted and 499 said yes, the union loses.
Right.
So that to me is so undemocratic. I mean, that's not how we do votes. We base things on the people who voted. And the other thing that is just so, I guess, frustrating to me is that as legislators, we do not get a majority of the residents of our district.
Right.
I mean, I've looked at the numbers. I live in a high vote district. I have never gotten 18,001 votes is which I'd have to get. It's 36,000, I'd have to get 18,001. And I live in a high vote district. Some people get much less than that. So it's very hypocritical to me that you're telling unions that this is the way you have to recertify, but yet you as a legislator sit up here and you have not gotten the majority of the residents of your particular district. Then it also, it prohibits picketing over any personnel matter, and you're subject to immediate termination
right. If
you picket. Yeah, you well know that we've picketed quite a few times in our lives, and many other public employee unions have picketed. It's part of what you do to take your message to the public,
right.
To try to get out there what you think you need for yourself and for the people you work with. So that's one thing. And then there's a lot of really burdensome things in terms of what can and cannot go in the contract. It's very, very limited in terms of what you'll be able to actually negotiate over. And then I think it says anytime they want to change the salary, they can change it.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of really stuff in there that's going to make it very, very difficult. So it was a sad day for me when that passed. That was very personal to me because I've been a member of, you know, I'm still a retiree member of AFT Local 691, and I know how much this is going to hurt unions. And I just, I still think the whole thing is geared, public employee unions, we're rising. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the ones rising. We're getting more numbers, and they want to squelch that.
Well, and again, this is, you know, they call it paycheck protection, but this has a lot to do with the biggest donors.
Right.
Right. And, yeah, it was amazing. And when I was listening to several people give them hell on the floor, and here is the thing that I was furious listening to is that the sponsor of the bill and anyone else who was arguing on the other side kept arguing with erroneous information.
Yes.
I didn't understand why they kept saying, no, but it depends on how your union is structured, whether you represent everybody mm-hmm. in the unit or just your members. And several people, yourself included, were arguing back. And I talked to somebody the other day and I said, I can't believe they just don't know. They're so ignorant. And this person said to me, no, they've been told this. This is mm-hmm. like their truth.
Well, it's kind of interesting when I was inquiring of the sponsor and it was on the recertification issue, and somehow he kept saying, no, it's only, he thought it was just the union members who voted. And I'm like, no.
Well,
it's
we not. Wish.
Yeah, right. I don't even think he understood that, you know, it was voluntary. And so then this other guy came over and was kind of sitting by him, and he had the same bill. And I think he kind of knew what was really in the bill. And I think he was trying to coach him. But the sponsor, yeah, you're right. He didn't know what was in his own bill. And he's trying to tell me what it is, and I'm looking right at it. you know, and it's just like it's like the facts don't matter to them, which we know that's not just in Missouri, but
right,
yeah,
right, yeah, yeah. Facts don't matter in several places in our country right now. So, so what else happened near the end of this session or during this session in general that you want to tell us about? We have about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, I think another provision, another bill that passed very late in the session again, it was that Thursday when it passed, was the dismantling of the state merit system.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe around 57,000 state employees, you know, throughout the whole state, and they have what's called a merit system, which means that they are supposed to be hired and fired on their merit. If they're fired, they have due process, which means that they can ask for why they're being fired. We totally dismantled it. This bill, it was I think it was SB 1007. It completely dismantled the merit system and said that employees can be fired for no reason unless they're a protected class under the federal law.
Right.
And then it also deleted all the language that allows you to request in writing why you have been fired. So you can be fired for no reason, and you cannot even request in writing why you have been fired. The merit system was set up like probably about, I'm going to say, maybe 80 years ago because of political patronage. They didn't want people in government, you know, the higher ups in government, the governor and all the other elected officials, giving jobs to people just based on politics.
Oh, sure.
And so that's why the merit system was set up, to say, no, you should get your job based on merit. You're qualified, you know what you're doing, you've got the experience, whatever. And we just dismantled that, and I think that is a tragedy.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, so much in this session has come to pass that we never really thought would. Well, Representative Judy Morgan, our time is up. As always, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, two interviews. First of all, we'll talk with representatives from the Clean Missouri campaign, followed by an interview of Jobs with Justice. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Hello, this is Martha Lally, producer of KKFI 90.1 FM's Anything Goes show with Charles Ferrugia and Carol Jean Barta. Carol Jean, since the late 1990s, there's been a sudden disappearance of bees.
That's right, Martha. And you know, bees make more than just honey. They are key to our food production.
Find out more about the disappearance of bees in the state of Kansas, Missouri, and the nation.
That's Fridays at noon on Anything Goes.
Why weep or slumber, America, land of brave and true? There's castles and clothing and food for all. All belongs to you. Every man a king, every man a king. For you can be a millionaire. If there's something belonging, there's enough for all people to share. When it's sunny June and December too, or in the winter time or spring, there'll be peace without end, every neighbor a friend, and every man a king.
And every woman a queen. And welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum. My name is Lon Swearingen, and my guest is Kelly Street. Kelly, tell us a little bit about yourself before we start with the topic.
Well, my name is Kelly Street. I'm a married father of four, hardworking guy. I joined Operating Engineers Local 101 in Kansas City in 1998. I had worked construction for years before that. I had jobs, didn't have any insurance, no benefits.
All right.
And I realized that if I wanted something better, I needed to join a union.
Okay.
In 2010, I joined the Brotherhood of Railway Carmen, Lodge 6762. I'd been a union steward before with the operating engineers on several job sites, and I knew the importance of having representation on the job site.
So what are you doing right now as far as the union?
As far as the union goes, right now I am local chairman of the Brotherhood of Railway Carmen, Lodge 6762. For many years, I worked as a committeeman after I came out of my apprenticeship. I moved up to be a trustee, and then I was recording secretary.
Okay. And then what I have here is a ballot activism and the right to work. I'll read a definition of that and let you extrapolate on it. Here it is, right to work for less law, commonly called right to work laws. There are statutes in 28 U.S. states on that prohibits union security agreements between companies and workers' unions. Under this law, these laws, employees in unionized workplaces are banned from negotiating a contract which require all members to benefit from the union contract to contribute in the cost of the union representative. What does that really mean?
What that really means is that you can work in the same place that I do. You don't have to pay union dues, and you still get all the benefits that a union provides you.
Okay. That doesn't seem right, but
it doesn't seem fair.
No. How did you come to get involved in the petition drive to put the right to work initiative on the ballot?
When I first learned about it, the passing the right to work law, which is now called Proposition A,
right,
I immediately started looking for a place where I could help. I found some places they were giving some seminars on how to legally get the signatures we needed to get this on the ballot. I went to a meeting, I learned how to collect these signatures, and from there I went to my family and friends and I talked to them. I kind of got a feel for how to get signatures. From there I went to coworkers collecting signatures, and from then on I just kept working.
All right. And did, when you were doing it, did you get much resistance in trying to get the signatures?
Honestly, no. I didn't meet with very much resistance, a little bit here and there, but most of it was positive.
Could you tell us some stories about what worked at work and some of the people and some what they have to say about these things?
Sure. I started up, I had some tables, and I would go out, and I had my daughter, Katie. She made some signs that said, right to work, wrong for Missouri, sign the petition here. We went out in the public, and I just set up in empty parking lots in different towns across District 4, which is south of Kansas City and east of Kansas City, a really rural area.
Right. You had a story about Walmart, didn't you? Something about Walmart where you set up a deal there?
Oh, yeah. I set up my stand at Walmart a couple of different times in the parking lot near the entrance there. And I collected over 200 signatures that day before Walmart employees came and asked me to leave.
Okay. So you basically do what people ask you to do when they ask you, but you'll do what you have to get signatures before they come in and say something. Is that it?
Oh, yes, that's it. Yeah. Everywhere I went was mostly good things.
Right.
I didn't know that Walmart had a policy at that time that you had to get a permit and those kind of things.
Right.
So when they asked me to leave, I just left.
Right. And now that it's on the ballot, what will be the strategy to bring voters out on August 7th, because it's a smaller group generally in the primary versus the general, isn't it?
Yes. It was moved to August 7th because that is generally a lower voter turnout. That's one of the things that I'm doing here today, is to get the message out to everyone to get out and vote on August the 7th. Labor is asking everyone to vote no on Prop A. We are obviously going around talking to people. We are phone banking, making phone calls to people, talking to coworkers, family, friends, anybody we meet on the importance of getting out and voting.
All right. So generally there are fewer participants, but what about rural Missouri? Do you have people out there in that group of cities, small towns, and that?
Yes, that's one of the things that I did during the campaign to get it on the ballot.
All right.
And that is one of the things that I'm doing now. And
all right.
And not just myself. Dennis Hull is a good friend of mine. Dennis lives in a small town. And people all across the state are doing this to get the message out to people.
Right. And so how would you say the canvassing and this kind of thing works out? How did we do that? And are there people talking to other people, and is that how you do it?
Yes. And it's fairly organized.
Right.
But if people want to do it on their own, they certainly can pick it up and volunteer.
All right. And how does that work with voter registration and all this kind of stuff? What do you do about that?
Getting people registered to vote?
Right, right, right.
I am one of the people, and there's a lot of others in the state that are registered with the state of Missouri to get people registered to vote.
Right.
And we also get out the message that if you're not registered to vote, we tell them how to get registered to vote.
All right. And so forth and so on. So when's the last day that you can do that?
July 11th is the last day that you can register to vote on the issue of Proposition A on August the 7th.
And could you tell us more about some of your stories that you have about what's been going on when you go out and get some of these people to sign?
Well, it was an interesting summer last year. I spent a lot of time away from home. I missed a lot of suppers. I missed a lot of that kind of stuff with my family. I had people that were very happy to see me out doing it because I was in a rural area and people
right.
wanted to see me there. I had people bringing me water, those kinds of things that didn't even know me.
Right.
I had one guy, he was a self-employed carpenter. And he had a couple of employees with him, and they came to me in Pleasant Hill when I was over there getting signatures because they knew the importance of this law.
Could you explain the law a little more about what it does and why it would be a war that the unions would want and some others might not? Can you explain that somewhat?
Well, I can explain why, as a worker, why I don't want the law. I think that it hurts working families.
All right, but as far as if you want everybody out to vote, right?
It's we want everybody to turn out to vote. This isn't a union issue only. This is all about working families across the state of Missouri.
All right, and so have you say that you have somebody that you want to go and help you? How do you recruit people to canvass for you? And this kind of thing.
Word of mouth is really great tools. Talk to people at your job sites.
All right.
You can contact the AFL-CIO. They would point you in the right direction.
Right. And so you have this whole thing going. Now, where will be the big push? Where do you think you need the most people out to vote?
We need everyone out to vote.
All right.
Everyone in the state of Missouri needs to come out and vote. As far as a big push, I think we need to be able to contact everyone and make them aware. A lot of people aren't aware of Proposition A and what it really is.
Okay. And can you really get it in deeper terms about what Prop A is?
Prop A is basically a right-to-work law.
All right, and what does that do? What effect does it have on employment of people and this kind of thing?
Proposition A will drive down wages for Missouri families.
Okay.
It will weaken unions.
All right.
Proposition A will cost us jobs.
All right. Why will it cost us jobs? Are there people, couldn't their businesses bring jobs in? I mean, that's something that people think about all the time, is we need more jobs. Won't it bring businesses in because of that?
No, I do not believe that it will bring businesses in.
All right.
If you look at states that have these right-to-work laws, their unemployment is a lot worse than the state of Missouri.
Okay, so you think this is a way of understanding that the law itself basically has issues that may cause problems in the future?
Oh, yes, definitely cause problems in the future.
And so what would happen if this proposition does go into effect? What will happen to workers and these kinds of things? What do you think will happen?
Safety issues. I've worked in states that are right-to-work states.
All right.
And I have seen firsthand on job sites where there are a lot of safety issues because you don't have anybody there to help protect the workers.
Okay.
If you break the unions, there's nobody there to speak up for you.
Okay.
And that's what Proposition A is all about.
All right. So basically, couldn't employees basically push for these things individually?
Employees probably could, but collective bargaining is a way better tool than a single person trying to get something done.
All right. So that's where we come into. It's the group, and then you have the individual. And so the more people you have as a group, you need some help, because as an individual, they can get.
Yes, and large corporations know that, and that's why they are funneling all this money into our state to push this law through. They know that a single person is far weaker than a group of people.
Right. So that's it. Tell us some stories about what your work was like in states that had the right to work.
In the states that, in the past when I worked there, the wages are lower, and you can see the living conditions are a lot worse for the people that live there because they don't make as much money. They can't buy the things that their family wants, the family needs. I've seen safety violations, and there's no one to complain to.
All right. Now, would that affect overtime and all that other kind of things that go along with employment and this, like overtime and comp time and all this kind of stuff?
Oh, it sure could, yeah.
In what way would it affect that?
Well, this law will weaken your unions who fight for you, who get your contract for you, and it could make them not as strong, where they cannot get as good a contract, and unions set the scale. Whatever, if the unions are making less money, everybody else is going to make less.
But say that I'm an individual and I want to move up the ladder. What does the union do for that? In other words, I'm a worker, and I want to go into management. Should I join a? The concept is would I want to join a union and do it that way? How do I, as an individual, basically, maybe wanting to go up the ladder, do that and deal with a union? I'm just curious about it.
As an individual starting out, you'll get the training through your union that you need to do your job and to do a professional job on it. Then as you work your way up the ladder, once you get into management, you will understand the worker's side of it and hopefully become a better manager by doing that.
So that you can do that. You can jump from a union into management. People have done that then?
Oh, yes. People do that all the time.
Okay. So it isn't a way of blocking you from wanting to do more in employment?
No.
Okay. Because some people have said that. That's why I was asking the question.
Okay. No, that is completely false.
Okay. So that's the other thing. What would do, how would you approach a person, say, at Walmart to try to build a union? I'm getting off a little off the subject.
That's a little off topic. I'd like to stay on Proposition A.
All right, why don't you do that? Tell us a little more about Proposition A and what it does and how it works some more and what other people are saying about it.
Well, Proposition A, obviously, is right to work, as we've discussed.
But doesn't everybody have a right to work?
Everybody does have a right to work, and the Constitution already guarantees that.
So what? How did they come up with the name right to work? Is there an odd here? What is the idea of that?
The right to work is a very deceptive scheme. It's aimed at doing exactly one thing to Missouri families.
Right.
And that is to lower your wages and benefits. And right to work sounds great. Everybody wants the right to work.
Right.
But you already have that, and it's already in there. They have already ruled on it.
Okay.
So everybody does have the right to work.
Right.
This is a very, like I said, it's very deceptive.
Right.
It's a catchy name.
Right.
And it tricks a lot of people into thinking that it's a good thing, and it's actually not.
Okay, so what would you tell someone to give them the information they would need to make an informed decision, say, on both sides? In other words, somebody's talking about voting for it, and you would like them not to, but you don't want to alienate them. So how do you approach something like that? Because people have their own opinions, right?
Oh, sure. Everybody is certainly welcome to have their own opinions, and we all do on all kinds of different issues.
Right.
On this issue here, I suggest that you do your own homework.
Okay. And where would you go to find this kind of thing? What would you recommend people to read or study or do that on this proposition, since it was passed by the legislature?
Well, there's all kinds of information out there.
Right.
The internet's a good source for it.
All right. And what would you put down as far as the internet? What would you write down?
I would type in right to work laws.
Is that what that would do it then?
That would get you to, I'm sure, several different websites.
All right.
That would probably have both sides on it.
Okay, because I want both sides so that everybody gets to know what's going on.
Right, that way you can make an informed decision
on
your own.
Right, that's what I'm trying to push, is an informed decision on this issue. Because there are a lot of people that feel that right to work is a good thing because it's going to help them individually, because that's the push, individually.
Yes, some people do believe that, but it is false.
Okay.
Right-to-work laws will not help individuals.
Why not? Why won't it help? You don't have to pay dues, and if I go into a union shop, man, I got it made. You guys are going to have to pay for it. And I heard where you could actually, the lawyer that would do it for a union person didn't do it right for me, I could sue him. I mean, this is the kind of thing that being talked. Is that true? That can it happen?
That is a true statement. That could happen if things went that way. But what you have to look at is if enough individuals are not paying into the system, no matter what system it is, sooner or later that system is broken.
In other words, if enough people decide not to pay dues, the union is down.
And sooner or later the union can and will be broken.
Right, and so that's another thing. That's kind of an interesting concept, because the idea is that we have places where that's happening, isn't it? Now, that's with the public employees have that, right? The same thing, that the concept that they have to basically be for those that aren't paying dues. Is that true?
I believe so. I'm not in the public.
All right. Because that's what I've heard is that's another issue. And this is just taking it one step further and putting it into the private sector. All right. It's about, you have something you were going to say at the end.
I want to remind everybody to get out and vote on August the 7th. That is Election Day. July 11th is the last day you can register to vote on August the 7th. And once again, Labor would like everyone to get out and vote no on Proposition A, August the 7th.
All right. And so what we have is a due date on July 11th. 11th. Is the last day that you can register to vote in the primary.
Yes, that is true.
And so, and then August 7th is Election Day with the Proposition A on it and other things going. And so, what would you say, how do you get people to register? Do you have any idea how to do that?
It's the right thing to do. You should get out, and I believe that everyone should use their right to vote. That way,
all right,
you can make your voice heard.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Kelly. I really do. Thank you.
Okay, and now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. The Poor People's Campaign, Day 3, Season of Nonviolent Direct Action. This one is on Against Militarism. Tuesday, May 29th, 11 to 2 p.m., in Jefferson City, 324 Madison Street. That's where they're starting, and it's a march to the Capitol. Jobs with Justice Community Rally for No on Prop A. Wednesday, May 30th, 10 a.m. Place will be announced. So tune in. Well, you won't. You can call Jobs with Justice for that one. SEIU Local 1, Rally for Good Jobs with Congressman Cleaver. Wednesday, May 30th, 5 p.m. So there's two demonstrations next Wednesday, one at 10 a.m. on Prop A and one at 5 p.m. for good jobs, and I think they're janitorial jobs downtown. Interesting issue. We'll be reporting on it next week. Walnut Street and East 12th. So 12th and Walnut in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Jobs with Justice Organizing Committee, Tuesday, June 5th, 6:30 p.m., All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut. And finally, artists, musicians, labor cultural workers, the Great Labor Arts Exchange for 2018 will take place June 21st to 24th at the ATU Tommy Douglas Conference Center in Silver Spring, Maryland. For more information, go to laborheritage.org. And that same week is the Midwest School for Women Workers, which will be taking place in Minneapolis. And if you look for Midwest School for Women Workers on the internet, you can find more information. You can find our calendar on our webpage at heartlandlaborforum.org. Also, our upcoming shows and our archived shows. So if you want to listen to tonight's show again, you'll find it there by tomorrow afternoon. That's it for the show. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Next week, we're going to have Lauren Arthur and Kevin Corlew, who are both running for state senate, I believe it is. And they're going to be kind of debating, I guess. We'll be interviewing both of them. And then we're going to have part of the show is called TIFF over TIFF in Raytown. That's about the Raytown Walmart, I believe. Okay.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.